Hello, everyone. This is Dale Sellers with the 95 Podcast. Before we begin today's episode, I wanted to take a moment and just say thank you for supporting the 95 Podcast over the years. We are about to release our 200th episode, and we also were able to cross 50,000 downloads because of your support. Thank you so much for supporting the podcast. As you know, one of the things that we're passionate about at 95 Network is supporting and strengthening, encouraging, coming along beside the small and mid-sized church leader. And you've heard us talk about the new Soul Care Essentials Conference. You've often heard us say that we believe a healthy leader creates a healthy organization. And that's why we created this conference. It deals with three areas of your life in this half-day conference. First of all, we talk about your private life, what's going on inside your head. The second session is about your personal life, what's happening inside your relationships, your marriage, your parenting, friendships. And our third session is about your professional life. I'm excited today to announce that Compassion International has come along beside 95 Network to sponsor the Soul Care Essentials Conference. Their support allows someone to sponsor the conference without any financial obligation. We're looking for folks who would be willing to host the Soul Care Essentials Conference presented by Compassion International in your town. If you're connected to a ministerial group, you're part of a denomination, or you just have influence with spiritual leaders in your town, would you consider being a host of this particular conference? Compassion is going to sponsor 20 Soul Care Essentials Conferences over the next year. We would love to come to your town and present this very important half-day conference. The only obligation we ask of you is that you provide lunch that day. So if you'd be willing to host this conference, would you please reach out to me at Dale, D-A-L-E, at 95network.org. It's the numbers 95, 95network.org. And let's talk about possibly having the Soul Care Essentials Conference presented by Compassion in your town. And now let's get to the podcast.
I was preaching the Saturday morning to at a men's breakfast. I preached a sermon called Fight. I used the example of a boxing match, a particular boxing match where a fighter got knocked out clean. At the count of seven, he got up and he went on to fight, continued to fight, and fought the fight to a draw. And I use that example of, you know, what it looks like to come back, worst things that happen to you in your life. Not knowing that 7 hours later, I would have, at this point, the worst thing that has happened to my life up to this point.
You're listening to the 95 Podcast from the team at 95 Network, where we host conversations specifically designed to support leaders in small and mid-sized churches.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the 95 Podcast. This is Dale Sellers, Executive Director, 95 Network. And once again today, I'm very excited about a new friend that I have. I met Trevor at the United Conference recently that Converge Mid-Atlantic had, and we just immediately hit it off. He is from Pennsylvania, so obviously someone from South Carolina, someone from Pennsylvania should be just tight. but we hit it off. We just had a great time. And I got to talking to him and learned his story. And I just felt like today, Trevor's story is really going to touch your heart. And so I'm really excited about you guys getting a chance to get to meet him and get to know him like I have too. So Trevor Williams, welcome to the 95 Podcast.
Thank you, Doug. I hope Dale. I'm just, like I said, I'm just honored and I'm also humbled just with everything that is going on. I'm just grateful that, you know, I'm able to share my story and hopefully get a chance to just, like I said, be able to help somebody, encourage someone, and just know that God's faithful in all of it. So.
Well, I just immediately, my heart just connected with you. And so we're going to get into your story. You actually have a book coming out about your story. But before we do that, kind of spend a little time and let's get to know you. What's your background? As we mentioned, you live in Pennsylvania. I don't know if you've always lived there or not, but just kind of let us get to know who you are a little bit.
Yep. I'm actually born and raised in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. You know, both my parents, my father who passed away, of course, about a year ago, a little over a year ago. My mother, who's still alive, of course, Patricia. And so the kid that grew up in church, you know, typical kid that grew up in the church in the city. And of course, with, you know, kid growing up in the city, it's like you got one foot in the church and one foot in the streets. Mm-hmm. And so I've kind of navigated my life in that way. And, I always laugh because I tell people all the time, I said, I grew up in a small church, about maybe 120, 130 people, started from a two-car garage. Sunday school was in one of our deacons' basements, you know, so like I'm old school in that way. And, yeah. You know, I enjoy, but look, before church planning was a hot phrase, people have been doing it for years.
That's right.
So, So, you know, I've grown up under that. And so, you know, grew up in the small kind of like the storefront kind of church kind of feel. And so never. And like I said, that church is still going, still thriving. The pastor that who's been my who was my pastor for most part of my life is actually retiring this year. So got a chance to see him last week at a funeral. But just thankful that I have still those connections there and still have strong faith connections and still strong support. And I would say most of my I'd say most of my walk with most of my walk within the church has always been, it's been positive, but it also has its challenges. And I say that in, on the other side of it, where I did have some trauma early on as a child, where I had a unfortunately somebody that was involved with ministry. Basically, I've been sexually molested. I mean, it kind of goes deep and veers off, but wow. Yeah, it's just like, you know, those kind of.
Was it at church?
No, it was actually they were close friends of the family.
Gotcha.
Well. Yeah. So, you know, it's and unfortunately, that's one of those things that we hear about very often. And it's I think now it's starting to get a lot more traction as far as things happening and people reporting these things. Yeah. So, you know, so I'm running correspond with that part of my life and also trying to hang on to what, you know, not so much. I can say I was in church, but really just didn't hang on to it because I really didn't feel that I was worthy of it or I had this happen to me. So God doesn't love me. And so at that point, I really dealt with some sexual identity issues. But also but what I did is because I had a lot of male figures, like my father's side was a very patriarchal family. So there was a lot of men involved. So I dug deep into sports. I dug deep into athletics and that kind of became my identity. You know, I actually became a star athlete. And, you know, I kind of put my identity into that. You know, I played, sure. You know, played multiple sports. And so, of course, that gives you notoriety, that gives you know, kind of favor with females. And so you don't have to do a whole lot of talking. And so it kind of allowed me to have this persona. And so as I was getting ready to end high school, I was trying to, you know, go to college, try to play sports, had it actually suffered an injury, while I was playing sports. And so, of course scholarships go away cause they kind of look at you in the meat market, unfortunately, even though we love sports, but you know, at the end of the day, it is a meat market to some degree. And, so it was one of those things where it was really, my world felt like it was crashing because I had poured all this time and energy and effort into trying to make this goal happen. And then it doesn't happen. And I think that was a pivotal point, as far as my relationship with Christ, because then I didn't put my focus on what I was doing. I had to deal with the real me and deal with some of those unresolved issues that had started to unearth themselves. And in the midst of that, you know, being addicted to pornography and everything else in between that I kind of hid behind the scenes because I was good at presenting well, but was able to hide those things behind the scenes. And God started to really deal with my heart. And it took a moment. It really took a moment of me. I remember clear as day. I went to a party one time. My cousin was going to college, and I went to a party, went to their homecoming, and I came home, and just to be honest, I had a great time. And I came home and I remember unpacking my clothes, and I was like, I spent all this money, I spent all this time, I spent all this energy and all this planning, and I still feel broken. I still feel empty. I still feel like I got this God-sized void that I've tried to throw things into. It's almost like trying to throw a penny and expecting it to fill up the Grand Canyon. And that's just really what it was. And I just, at that point, I remember like plain as day, like a day before my 20th birthday, you know, it was October 17th, 1999. I gave my life to Christ on my bedside saying, I'm tired of me. I'm tired of doing it my way and my way's not working. And at that point, and it's kind of wild because at that point, it wasn't even 2 months later until I met the woman who ended up becoming my wife. And it's kind of how God plays that stuff, plays that out. And even that's another story in itself, but, you know, it plays out where, you know, she ended up, being my wife. And, you know, I started making some major decisions for myself because this is what I always tell God. I always tell guys that I either mentor or shared with, I said, people, you know, we have this thing where we see all these podcasts with these, you know, I could get into a whole tangent on that. But I said this, I said, a woman will do two things I said, a good woman will do two things. Either you're going to step up or you're going to step off. there's no in between. Either you're going to get your stuff together. She's not going to
settle. Yeah.
Right. Well, not even so much that going to settle, but within yourself.
Yeah.
You're going to see her and you're going to be like, you know what? I need to get my stuff together. Uh-huh. Period. And there's no questions asking. So
she pulls
you I actually made a decision because she was in college. She was like a goner grad, you know, at the time. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, with I'm like working at a factory. And I'm like, we're not trying to do that. And it's no shame to anybody that works at a factory, does that kind of stuff. I mean, they make great money, but I just didn't I knew that wasn't what I wanted to do in my life. And so I made a decision to enlist in the United States Army. Just to get my life jump started. Spent 8 years in the United States Army Reserves. Did one tour in Iraq during that time. And in between that time, I did get married. You know, we did get married and had three beautiful children there. I got a teenager in high school, a soon to be teenager coming up and another middle schooler. So my house is like
wide open. I got two thoughts I want to ask you. First of all, were you close to your dad?
Yeah, I was.
Was he there for you?
Most of that time, it's kind of an interesting story because most of that time there was a 7 year clip that my parents were separated, which is actually a work of God in itself because early on in my childhood, he was, you know, of course, had some improprieties and ended up having two children out of wedlock to different women, which is kind of wild. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that led to the separation. And even during that time, there was a lot of resentment from my father because I was like, you know, you left us, you made this choice to basically choose your time with other women. But also unfortunately, when those women ask for child support, it takes money out of our household too. Mm-hmm. My mom, she was a, you know, stalwart and raising two teenage boys and two boys in itself is a challenge. But, you know, I always honor my mom for that because, you know, she could have easily just said, you know what, I'm done. And kept it moving. And she, resolved to make it work. They didn't, you know, they didn't divorce, but they made it work. And so it actually led to my father's returning to our home. And I think a pivotal part of that was my grandmother passing away at that time when I was 14. I think that was a pivotal point for him because my grandmother loved my mom. And so when my dad was acting up, he would not come to the house. He would not come to my
house. Was that his mom or her mom?
No, it's his mom.
Okay, that's what I thought. I think you were saying.
Like, my grandmother, that was my father's mom.
Yeah.
She loved my mom, and so if he was acting up, he wouldn't come by their house, by my grandfather's house, because my grandmother would give him the business.
Yeah, I bet. Her own son.
She ruled with an iron fist. Was a godly woman, but she ruled with an iron fist. Yeah. She was one of those old school ushers in church that had the white gloves. With the ashy white stockings every Sunday, man.
She kept everybody in line.
Yes, absolutely.
So when you were in Iraq, did you see combat? Did you see
difficult
situations?
Yeah, I did see, you know, I did see some, I'm thankful to God, I didn't see a lot, but it was enough to be like, okay, people are really trying to kill us out here.
Yeah. This is not a movie.
this is the real thing. So, you know, thankful to God, he did keep me, you know, and during that season. And honestly, that was actually a pivotal point in my spirit walk too, because I felt like God was calling me to ministry, but I was kind of like putting my toe in a little bit in some places. I had started at the church I grew up in, I started, you know, becoming I was a Sunday school teacher, started teaching youth ministry to some levels. And, also even did some full-time ministry working at a Christian youth center called, The Mix in, Lancaster City. Mm-hmm. Spent 2 years there. And so that actually led to my actual career, choice at the time, which I work in student services. So I've been working, in different capacities, working with a, juvenile system, alternative ed. I've worked in general education. I worked as a behavior specialist in a K-8 school. So, and now I'm working actually in cyber education now as a family liaison. So it's kind of taken me a lot of different places, but I still have most of my career has been working with students. And I enjoy it because kids keep you young. So.
Yeah, they do. And they have problems. How old were you when you were in Iraq?
I had just turned 25.
Okay.
I had just turned 20, just turned 25, and I had just got married. That was the funny part. Like, literally,
we got married and deployed.
No, we were actually planning our wedding for almost a year and a half. Yeah, basically. Yeah. But we were planning our wedding for like a year and a half. And then we got married, and literally, we came back from our honeymoon, and like maybe a few days later, I got a call from our unit saying, hey, we're getting shipped. I'm like, wait a minute, dude.
This is not right.
I made it to the finish line.
So let me see if I understand your life correctly. You're 25 years old, and you were molested as a child. Your sports career fell apart. Your dad bailed out on you. I missed one here. And then you were in Iraq.
Yeah.
So you had a little trauma in your life by the time you turned 25.
Yeah. I'll even say this, just kind of backtrack. My dad did bail out, but thankful to God it came back together. And the loop of the story is that my father, probably within a year of him being home, gave his life back to Christ.
Oh, good.
And so that kind of started him on a tangent of being involved in men's ministry and discipling guys that were, that were homeless shelters and stuff like that. And I saw that was like his passion was mentoring men. And so,
That's awesome.
I saw a picture of that. I mean, he wasn't perfect in everything, but like that was one thing where I saw him light up and mentoring in men's ministry. And that's where he thrived at.
Did you resent that since he wasn't really there for you when you were younger? Or were you just happy that he finally turned his life around?
There were times of resentment. I think it's like a mixed bag at the time. There were times of resentment because I saw that he came back and, he kind of had to earn my trust in a lot of respects. And mm-hmm. so there were seasons where we were building the relationship. But honestly, I really feel like our relationship didn't take off per se until I'd say it was after I got married.
Okay.
I think it was after I got married.
Man to man kind of thing.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of it when I started seeing some of those similar challenges come up and like I said, those similar challenges of wanting to step out on your wife and all those other mm-hmm. pressures that come with leading your household. Then I started grabbing a level of grace for him.
Sure.
In the sense of like these are real things that are happening, and I have the potential to do these damaging things to my own family.
Could you guys talk about this stuff, or was it just kind of understood? Because my father and I, we were very close as far as like we could work together, we built houses together, but we didn't communicate at all. I mean, literally, I knew what to do because I just observed and did it. And there's a void in my life. I did his funeral a few months ago. Wow. There's a void in my life because, I mean, he never said, I'm proud of you. He never said, I love you. I knew he did. I knew he was proud of me. I knew he loved me, but he didn't say it. And I could not talk to him about anything that was going on in my life for just lots of reasons. Were y'all able to talk about this stuff, or did you just kind of pick up on it?
I think eventually over time, we finally got to that place mm-hmm. Where I was able to talk about different stuff that I was dealing with. And it was interesting because I wanted his perspective because I know that he had made those mistakes and had been down that road.
Yeah.
So I wanted to hear those things. And even I'll say like this, man, the last few years prior to him passing last year, I think were pivotal pieces. For me, because it really, in a sense of when I'll get to it later, but like just I would say probably the last 10 years of his life, mm-hmm. We probably fostered the greatest part of our relationship because I, gone through a lot of different stuff in between that time. And so, talking to him kind of gave me some perspective and allowed me to kind of say, OK, somebody else has gone through this, or, I could talk to somebody that, was dealing with some of those similar things. So, yeah, so I did get a chance to really, I'd say the last 10 years, we really got a chance to talk about a lot of different stuff. And, I'm still grateful for it. I mean,
I get, like I said,
there's these kind of weird juxtapositions of his life, but, mm-hmm. I'm overall, I'm thankful that I had a good relationship with him. And, at the end of the day, I know that he's with the Lord. And so he doesn't have to suffer with this life anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, as we get older, I think if we're not bitter, because sometimes we become bitter and cynical, so this doesn't happen. Yeah. But if we're walking with the Lord, especially, and we learn how to forgive, I think as we get older, sometimes we recognize, we see those struggles in our parents, and we begin to go, well, let me understand what caused that. And when we do that, it helps us. It doesn't excuse it. You know, with my dad, I love my dad. I honor my dad. But I will say this. My counselor said this about his relationship with his dad. He said at his dad's funeral, he stood up at his dad's funeral and said, Dad, I wish you knew who I am. I wish you knew what I did with my life. But his father did. And I was kind of that way, too. I was kind of like, man, there's just so much that could have been. I had to work through not becoming bitter and angry and cynical and all that stuff. And part of what helped me do that was recognizing that, well, you know, he had some struggles in his own life that he growing up and stuff like that, too. But it still doesn't excuse. We still need to be able to talk. And so I'm glad you guys were able to get there.
Yeah. And I think one of the bigger things that I've had to, I wouldn't even say wrestle with, but one of the bigger challenges I had to really walk through was understand. It's like, you know, how, like, I don't know if you've ever had this experience. Like, you know, there's things that you saw in your father, but then you start seeing them in yourself.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh man, those are the places where I really started to say, you know what? Maybe I need to give a little bit more grace and be able to forgive because I'm my father's child. At the end of the day,
I find that if it makes you angry or if you're embarrassed, then that means you probably haven't forgiven. Mm. You know, because you know, if something's, not other people pointed out, but you recognize, oh man, I can't believe I did that. My dad used to do that.
Yeah.
You probably haven't forgiven them if it bothers you that deeply because we're all human. Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a short break. And then when we do, we're going to come back and transition because this was all kind of a setup to the meat of your story and then what kind of led to you writing the book. So take a short break, folks. We'll be right back.
Hey, guys. Podcast producer Kevin here. Revelation 7:9 describes a group of people from every tribe, from every nation, and from every language all coming together to worship the Lord. In other words, a group of people that don't look like each other, probably don't even sound like each other, all coming together to worship God. Hiking Paul is our unity and diversity director, and it's his passion to see churches from across the globe all coming together in unity and unifying, and then going out and reaching their communities. As you think about Revelation 7:9, does that example describe your church and your community? I bet it's a safe bet that we all can use some help having this conversation and learning how to work better together. Now, to reach out to High King and find out more about him or anything else the 95 Network has to offer, please visit us on our site at 95network.org.
And back here with Trevor and I've heard it put this way. You're like a trophy of the grace of God. I mean, God's grace has been such an amazing thing in your life, you know, with all the stuff that you've worked through. But part of the reason I want to have you on today was to talk about what's happened recently in your life. And so I don't know how you want to pick it up and drive, get us into that story. You talked about being married, having three kids, being deployed. So maybe if you can get it from there and kind of update us with some of the other things that's happened.
Okay. So even like just backtracking to the being deployed, I think that was the part where I actually, you know, submitted to the call of ministry. Cause I think for me, I saw a lot of clues that were, you know, God gives us the clues, that he's calling us for something more and some more responsibility. And sometimes we know, I think because I'm fully aware of it, I don't have this, I call Jesus glitter feeling about ministry. Like I'm aware of it. My grandfather used to be my grandfather was a preacher. My dad, of course, was a Sunday school preacher Sunday school teacher, and then eventually became, got licensed in ministry as well. So I've been around preachers, preaching church, all that kind of stuff. So I'm not glossy to the glitz and glamour of ministry. I know the messy side of it. And so I was like, God, I don't want to do this unless you really, like, I really stick to this thing. I don't want to be phony about it either.
Yep.
I think that's the biggest thing. We've seen a lot of, unfortunately, in this day and age, we see a lot of counterfeits. And I didn't want to be a part of that and be named in that. Mm-hmm. So when I went overseas, that's when I took my call to ministry. And so it was, I felt like there was a quantum leap in my faith that happened there. Mm-hmm. And so it propelled me to just where I am. And just like, even like I said, to spend my first year of marriage in a war zone, I think was probably the greatest thing. It allowed me to really process a lot of different things. So when I came home, it allowed me to, it resolved a lot of things that I honestly think if I would have been home for our first year, it would have been a struggle. So there was a level of grace in that. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, for the 17 years that I was married to, I was married to a wonderful woman, my wife, Latoya. I'd say she, you know, we always use this phrase, but, you know, I tell people all the time, I said, she was a living, breathing, walking Proverbs 31:10-30. Like, it was like, I saw, people can read the scripture all they want to. I saw it in real time. Mm. And so that's the thing that I can really say, not to say that everything was perfect, but,
no.
But I can say, you know, that 17 years for me was I wouldn't be the person who I am. Mm-hmm. By God's grace, you know, that she was allowed to be in my life for that season, and the joy that she brought, and just the maturity that she has brought to my life. I think one thing that you have to be honest about is a wife will help a husband mature.
That's just the truth.
That's just being honest.
That's the truth, man.
And so I think, like I said, she helped me as far as ministry. She was my ministry partner. We did, you know, we did a lot of things together, whether I was in youth ministry, whether we did, we would mentor married couples. You know, she was a part of my entire ministry life. Mm-hmm. And so even like leading up to the morning. One morning I was actually, I was preaching the Saturday morning to at a men's breakfast, and preached a sermon called Fight, which basically, I think it's 1 Timothy 3 talks about fight the good fight of faith. And so I used the example of a boxing match, a particular boxing match where a fighter got knocked out clean, and everybody in the place knew this guy's out. Like, there's no way he's going to get up and return to fighting. And so at the count of seven, he got up. And then he, you know, the referee shook his hands like, hey, you okay? He got back up and he went on to fight, continued to fight the fight, and fought the fight to a draw, which was like a shock to everybody. And I use that example of, you know, what it looks like to come back from getting hit hard from the worst things that happened to you in your life. Mm-hmm. Not knowing that 7 hours later that I would have personally myself have at this point the worst thing that has happened to my life. Up to this point. So we were on our way home from coming from Lancaster to York. Basically, there's one major highway in between there that pretty much everybody uses. And so we're driving back like the 1,000 times that I've driven on Route 30. And so as we were driving, we're getting ready to go under. We're like maybe I'd say 50 to 100. I'd say about 200 feet from an underpass. A vehicle from the other side of the highway going the opposite direction comes across the grass medium. I've seen this happen before. So it's like, I didn't get super alarmed. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this happen before. So it, like, usually they stop most cases, but this vehicle somehow got back on our side, got to our side of the highway. Mm-hmm. And as we're getting ready to go into the underpass, there was no way that we could avoid it, and ended up hitting us head on coming. The car was going at a speed, apparently from the police report, about 85, 90 miles an hour, hit us head on. Unfortunately, in that crash, I of course, my wife is 17 years. She passes away immediately on impact. And so myself, my three children were in the car. We had to be hospitalized. Two of my children had to be medevaced to a local children's hospital. I was in the hospital as well. And so I had to wrestle with the realities of my body being like kind of mangled up a little bit. And also, mm-hmm. You know, my children's health, and there were just so many other things that were going on during that time. And so it was a shock to my system. Like, at one moment we're talking about what we're going to do when we get home, you know, like put the kids to bed for church or something like that. And then mm-hmm. next thing you know, it's like I'm fighting for my life and yeah. fighting for my sanity at that point. And so it was just kind of like a pivotal point, this pivot point that's happened in my life and basically has marked the last 2 years of my existence to some degree.
Well, we don't want to go into any kind of traumatic details, but you, you said you were unconscious, but then you became conscious before.
Yes.
And so you knew, you knew the results of what was happening.
Yeah. It was very interesting because I knew it, but I was kind of like living in denial. And so that part of it is like a, just, that I actually put that in, and we'll get to the book and stuff like that. But I do talk about that in detail. And so that gives an opportunity for everybody to kind of like actually see and kind of hear and get a vivid picture of what was going on with me at that time during that incident. So
you got to be freaking out, man. There's your wife. She's injured. And then you got your three kids. They're injured. And you literally are just living life, man. You're just driving down the road. And within a second, it all changes. And so she passes. Were you able to attend her funeral? Are you still in the hospital?
Yes. Well, we had to, that is kind of funny. That whole month, it was a month from the crash to the actual celebration. Mm-hmm. And I call it that because something in me triggered. And this is one of those things where I always use this phrase. I always use this phrase all the time. I said, when life really hits you, I always use the Gatorade phrase. Is it in you? Is the life that we claim in Christ, that the life that we say we have is Holy Spirit. Do we say we got his word in us? Do we, you know, things that come out of us. It's in these moments where you find out what's in you. And I always say, is it in you? You know?
Yeah.
And that's where we find out. And so I don't know if you ever had this experience. Like, I don't know if you, like, there's certain situations that happen and you just say, sometimes, because, you know, we'll question our salvation. We'll say, oh, man, am I really living for Jesus? Am I really saved? And then, like, certain things happen. You're like, I guess I am saved. Yes.
There's no other way I'd survive that one, you know?
Yeah, right. And I mean, we say that with a lot of different stuff. Like, you say, man, I would have responded differently in this season of my life. I would have responded differently. But, you know, I know that God has done something. But I really, this really, for me, told me something of not about me. It told me something about God. It told me something about his spirit and how, I don't know if I was just not, I wouldn't say oblivious, but I feel like his grace covered me from actually taking in consideration how bad things really were.
Yeah.
And just people that were coming to see me at the hospital were saying, like, I don't know if it was the drugs or what,
how long were you in the hospital?
Grand total, I was in the hospital for probably 3 weeks between the actual being in the hospital to having to go to inpatient rehab. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I was in the hospital for 3 weeks. Some of my injuries, I had a major concussion. My jaw was actually dislocated. My shoulder, my collarbone, my shoulder were moved out of place. My arm was broken. I don't know if you can see like one half of the scar here.
Yeah, and I see the scar. Side. Here. Oh, wow, dude.
Yeah, I had my camera's moving because it's like on it. Because the iPad has OnStar on it. But it runs basically the length of my forearm. I have four breaks on my forearm. And then my elbow had a dislocation. I had a dislocated elbow. I have 19 screws, two plates holding those together.
Goodness.
Not sure if those are going to be permanent or not, but they may be. I don't feel like going through another injury. Surgery.
If they're not hurting, I'd leave them. But that's just me. But now, what about your children? How long were they in the hospital?
They were in the hospital. Some of them got out early. My middle son got out much earlier than the other two because his injuries weren't as sustainable. I mean, he did have some trauma there, but he didn't have his injuries weren't as critical. Mail coming in. life still happens at the
Williams house. Going on. We're in the middle of the podcast. Right.
But my son, my youngest son, and my daughter had very life threatening injuries. They had their seat belts because of the impact. Their seat belts tore into their intestines. Mm-hmm. And my daughter had major head trauma because she was sitting behind my wife. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. I think it was amazing because in all of it, like I'd say probably with the first day or two, because I remember speaking with the, I was talking with my in-laws and I was talking to my parents because they were kind of back and forth between the hospitals because they were in Hershey Children's Hospital, which is one of the best hospitals in the country. So thank God that we lived close proximity to there.
Yeah.
My daughter, and I think this was probably the moment where I started to see what the Lord was doing. And my daughter came, well, she got medevaced, of course, with my youngest son. Of course, she had to go to emergency surgery and she had a major scar, like major gash across her eye. which basically would have, you know, she was 12 at the time. So this would be it from an aesthetics aspect. It would be horrific for a 12-year-old girl getting ready to go into teenage years and like having to deal with those identities. And that's not the main thing, but still I can understand what they do. But there was like, she had some, basically if it had been left as it was, it would have been, you know, it would have disfigured her face in some way. It just so happened that she arrived there, that there was a plastic surgeon on campus. Mm. They never have a plastic surgeon on that campus.
Wow.
And so they brought him into surgery. They, you know, they got her, they, you know, they got her, her face kind of pulled together. And if you look at her now, you wouldn't even tell that she had any injuries or had even sustained any kind of, you know, injuries in that matter. And so I started kind of seeing. So I said, OK, God, you're doing something. I said, I don't know what you're doing. You're doing something.
Yeah.
And just watching how and one thing I can't divorce from this is I can't divorce the community of faith that came, you know, our church at the time. They came full force and were. They were so gracious to us that people that were around us and even while we were at the hospital, because we're still kind of in the throes of COVID per se, because it's 2020.
What a time to have this happening too.
Yeah. And so it was kind of crazy because the CEO of the hospital, because they had like a strict policy about like having two visitors per day. Mm-hmm. The CEO of the hospital found out about my situation and said he can have anybody he wants to.
Awesome.
And so the people that came were the people that needed to come. They weren't the onlooker saying, oh, what happened? And, you know, being nosy, because you have folk like that.
Yeah.
But the people that came were intentional. People that came were people that I have been major pieces of my life. And so I really was grateful for just the community of faith who prayed, who encouraged, who, you know, cooked meals, who donated. It was just insane. I think the biggest thing that I laughed about was in that time, it's important to have community. And thankfully, like in the season of our lives, we weren't like financially like deprived. We had some things in place already. Mm-hmm. You know, it's important. And I say this for everybody. I would say get a life insurance policy.
Yep.
Get a will and a power of attorney.
Yep.
Thankfully, we had those in place already, because when I was in the military, we had already had those in place.
Very
but we amended it while we had children. Mm-hmm. Please get those things because they save you a lot of headache, but it also gives you a great cushion to move forward. I mean, that even speaks about just being us being good stewards of our resources. And so that's I would say you can't afford not to have one.
Yeah.
Just at the end of the day. So that's one of my big things I've been preaching from the high heavens is like, make sure that you have those in place. Well,
you have the right to, you've lived it. So, I'm assuming now, everybody's recovered physically.
Yes. Okay.
Everybody's doing good physically. Well, before we run out of time, I want to shift gears here a little bit and let's talk about how have you worked through, the trauma? Because all of a sudden overnight you become a single parent of three kids. You the woman of your dreams has now gone on to heaven, you have mentioned already made you a better man. And I know you had to work through some depression, you know, all that kind of stuff. How have you processed it?
I could tell you the one thing that I did through this whole process is it sounds churchy to some extent, but the one thing that I did is my wife was a, she used to dance, she used to worship and dance. Mm-hmm. And so the one thing that I had to keep in front of me, to be honest with you, was I said, I have to be able to worship through this. Mm-hmm. I have to be able to remind myself that God is still on the throne, mm-hmm. that God is faithful. It doesn't absolve us from going through things. Mm-hmm. It doesn't absolve us from bad things happening. We're not exempt from trouble, because even Jesus made it very clear. He said, in this world you will have tribulation. So if Jesus is saying this, it doesn't give it somebody who says the Christian life is going to be full of roses and you know, roses and beauty and Kool-Aid flowing out of your faucet, they lie to you.
They do lie.
You're still going you're still going to go through life. And what they say, life be life and still.
That's exactly
right. And so but one thing I had to keep in mind was like, God, I have to be in your face through this whole process. That's the spiritual side that I had to like hang on to. The other practical pieces are, I had, you know, thankfully I had good accountability. I have friends who are intentional, about checking in with me. And then also the other part of it is, having good mentors as well. I'm thankful to have men who have, unfortunately, in the course of life, they've lost their wives, and they were able to give me wisdom in real time where things I wouldn't have considered. Now I understand what they're saying because they've been there, they've walked through that. And so I was grateful to have men that were in proximity that could give me some play by play in regards to certain things they might have gone through or experienced. Some have married, some have are still, you know, still single. And so do I feel like I may get married again? It's possible. I'm 43, so I'm fairly young in a lot of respects.
You're just a baby.
You know, I mean, that's just the realities. I mean, but I mean, I juxtaposition against that. You know, I had a woman who was a picture of godly womanhood. So it's like the I wouldn't even say the comparison piece. My filter for things is very different.
Sure.
In this part of my life. So
well, if you do move on and do remarry, you cannot do the comparison game because it won't be fair to whoever you remarry. And you know, you already held your wife in high esteem. And now that she's in heaven, that esteem goes even higher and nobody can compete with that. So, so let me ask you this. Has it been 2 years now?
Yes. Yes,
2 years. What would over the last 2 years, what was maybe the lowest low that you experienced?
Oh man. Whew, boy.
You said, hey, I told you I was gonna ask you hard questions.
Yeah. I mean, I know I've had a few. Yeah. I think the lowest low for me was when I was in the hospital and our pastoral team had come to visit me. And so they were all in the room and we were talking and, I remember the lowest moment, and I'm actually kind of tearing up as I'm kind of thinking about it, welling up as I'm thinking about it, is I started talking about certain things about me and her. And I started talking about some of the plans that we had in the future. And that was, you know, at the time we were like working on, you know, last thing we had, we were working on was trying to, you know, pay off our mortgage and get out of debt. Well, basically be completely out of debt. Cause that was the last thing. And we were really putting a lot of emphasis on that. We weren't that far away. And, you know, we were talking about having a mortgage burning party and all these other things. Mm-hmm. And when I started talking about that and a handful of other things, I just, you know, it hit me at that moment.
Yeah.
It hit me. And I was just like, I just wailed, simply because it was like, this just got taken from me.
Yeah.
And I just could not believe like, this is my life now. Like where was this supposed to be a part of the story and part of my story? And just it was because it was so abrupt.
Yes.
There was no warning. Like there was no dream. There was no revelation or somebody prophesying and none of that. It just
happened.
And it just happened.
And turned on a dime.
It turned on a dime, man. And I just was like, I was so broken at that moment. And, I was just so at that point, I just couldn't figure it out. Like, and even when I went to the, I would think when I went to the rehab hospital, I think that week for me was probably the most sober week for me.
Sure.
Because I was really by myself in a lot of ways. And, you know, after I was done with my therapy, they basically put you back in a room and, didn't have as many visitors because of course they had strict over there.
Mm-hmm.
But I was alone a lot there, and I just was alone with my thoughts, alone with just time with being mad at God and just asking questions. And I think my biggest thing was I didn't ask why. I asked what, like, what is this? What is this going? What are we doing? Excuse me. What are we doing with this? God, what are you doing with this? Because I have no track of what's going on.
Yeah.
I say, what are you doing with this? You have to be doing something with this. Cause I don't have any clue or any.
There's no words, man. There's no words. There's no human advice there's no human wisdom. Right. Nothing else is going to get you through that but having a walk with God. And that's what sustains you. Now, do you go to counseling?
Yes, I do. I do go to counseling. I do have a therapist. She's good. She's great. She, Julie Motherfaro, it's great because she was actually, it's kind of interesting. She is a, of course, a nurse practitioner. Mm-hmm. So she knows the medical side and also knows good. The emotional and psychological side. And so of course she's a believer as well. So she's phenomenal. Good. So I've been going probably the last 5 or 6 months. I've been going to see her and, it's probably, I'd say that at the beginning of the year, mm-hmm. And it's been a real trip because she was there as well. It was kind of funny because her family was very tight with ours. And okay. I remember she came to the hospital and she would immediately, she'd say, "Hey, how are you doing?" And she'd look at the charts. Yeah. She would go in and look at the charts immediately.
Yeah, she didn't need you to tell her how you were doing. She could look at the charts and see how you were doing.
Oh my gosh. She was giving those practitioners all kinds of hell, man. I mean, she came in there like, oh man, she came in like a bull in a china shop, man. She would let them know like, "Hey, where is this going on? And you need to do this and this. I was like, and she would come in with her badge too. So she had
the authority. Well, I want to tell you, I want to have it on this podcast that if you ever get to a point, that you just need to talk to somebody, I'm here for you. We've got each other's phone number because it's just a long road. And the one thing we're all learning now on this side of the pandemic, which we should have known before, was that, and it's a New Testament concept. We need each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, to be healed, the Bible says you got to confess your faults to one to another. So that's why a lot of people don't get healed. It's because they won't confess. And so in the remaining time we have now, so you got a book deal out of this, or you're writing?
Yes.
The
crazy part about it, honestly, I was writing another book, but it was like, it became like a hobby. You know, I was just writing a book. It was just off another topic. And I felt the Lord was prompting me to write about what was happening. And I just was like, I can't touch that. I don't want to revisit it. Yeah. It's going to, because I know if I put it on page, it's going to make me go deep into some places I don't want to go to.
And so I went to that myself when I wrote my book.
Yeah. So I went to a conference in last October called Flavor Fest in Tampa, Crossover Church, really great church, Pastor Tommy Colon and founder of it. And so I was doing the conference 20 years. So I went to the conference and ran into a gentleman by the name of Peter Lopez, and we were basically staying at the hotel. We just happened to run each other at the fitness center and just working out and, you know, just have a cordial conversation. So I was getting ready to go upstairs to go change and get ready for the conference, but I decided to go to the breakfast bar. And so he came in as well, and he said, "Yeah, man," he said, "I just good, nice meeting you this at the third." And so he said, "I'm getting ready to go to a conference." So come to find out that he was going to the same conference as I was. So we started talking and so he said, "Yeah," he said, "I'll informally introduce myself." He said, "My name is Peter Lopez, and I'm like I said, I own a publishing company called Publify Press." And I just, like, all of a sudden tears just started flowing down my face. And I'm sitting there just saying, why would I meet a guy who owns a publishing company? And he starts talking about how, you know, he has over 1,000 authors, he's had a few bestsellers. And I'm just sitting there just like, I said, "You just don't know what you're saying right now." And so as I started kind of divulging and started getting the detail of, you know, what I've been through at that time, it was about a little over a year. Mm-hmm. And he just looked at me and he shook his head, and he just sitting there just like kind of like in this position. He said, "Dude, you don't realize how many people need to hear your story."
That's right. That's why I want you on the podcast.
And he said, we'll publish your book. And like, I don't think I could keep tears in my face the whole weekend.
Yeah.
Because it was like this thing that just happened out of like God's timing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm in all of it. And so, the book, it's like I said, I've been working on it. It's the book is called God of the Gray Area. Mm-hmm. And really, it really boils down to when life, we want life to be so black and white and so explained. But what do we do with those parts of our life that are unexplainable? Those things where we're still feeling like there's no middle ground. There's no foundation, mm-hmm. Especially with grief, particularly with grief and loss and mm-hmm. Things of that nature. And I go into detail about that and just kind of how I walk through that and just kind of take on different angles as, you know, losing, you know, grief as a public, I mean, even for myself, just being a public figure. If you're in pastoral ministry, you're guaranteed you're a public figure. Mm-hmm. And I recognize that even for my wife and I, I recognized, I think, when everything happened, how much of a public figure I was. And I've had people walk up to me and say, you know, you're just such an, like, people that had never met me, they started following me online. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh man, like you're inspiring to me. And I'm thinking to myself, my goal is not to inspire to you. I'm trying to just make it through.
I'm working through it, man. I'm just working through it. You know why that's inspiring though? It's because too many people won't work through it. Here's the thing, you know, you're still young, which is good. But people my age, I'm in my 60s, and one of the reasons we won't change and we won't work through things is because of, it's like compound interest. The older you get and not deal with stuff, the price you have to pay to work through it is just more than most people will pay. And though it's painful for you now to work through all this, if you wait, you'll become a bitter old man, you know. And so that's why I wanted you on the podcast, is because the Lord has graced you, but you still had to say yes. You know, there's too many people who want to walk up to you and say, well, the Bible says the Lord will take what happened bad and turn it for good. Well, that is true. The Bible says that, but you don't need trite statements right now, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying God's word is trite, but I'm just saying you don't need platitudes because platitudes don't work. And so when I met you, I'm going, you're not over it yet, but you're going to be. And that's what's encouraging, because we meet a lot of folks that they're not over it and they're not going to be.
Right.
And so I'm so proud of you.
Yeah. Thank God. I mean, I'm just thankful to God that I even have the opportunity just to, like, be able to share on your podcast. Cause I mean, I could easily be in another framework. I had another friend of mine who's a therapist, and he told me, we just had a conversation. He said, you don't realize how far ahead, how much further ahead you are than a lot of people. He said, you're able to communicate where you are exactly. Mm-hmm. And I never took that in consideration. I was like, I always thought, you know, okay, that's just a part of just who I am. But,
well, you know, it is, but you know why? It's because you've already been through so much trauma that you've been healed of as a kid.
Right.
See, here's why I want to talk about trauma. I talk about it all the time on our podcast. Trauma, I learned this from my counselor. You know, trauma, just if you don't deal with it, it just cycles around the base of your brain and it never goes away. And so when you get a new trauma, the old one doesn't go away. It adds to it. It just keeps adding on. And so most of people you meet are just, they're layers of trauma. And part of what's helped you work through this is the fact that over time you work through some of that pre-trauma before this big thing happened. And so at least it gave you a pathway out.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. I think, and let's kind of backtrack a little bit. I mean, I lose my wife traumatically, and I'm also dealing with the trauma of just my body physically, mm-hmm. emotionally, and even
and your kids
and having children. Mm-hmm. It's like I lose her in June 2021. December 2021, I lose my dad. Mm-hmm. I have to now manage the things for my dad and take care of my mom, mm-hmm. but also eulogize my dad while I'm still grieving my wife. and I mean, I don't know what kind of, I said, I know it's nothing but God, because I know after that, I had nothing left.
There's nothing left.
I literally lose nothing left.
I have found in my ministry that the times when I got nothing and I still step up is when he comes through in ways that I never dreamed of. And I see that in you. So here's what I want to do, because we could obviously talk for hours. As we're at the end of the podcast, here's what I want to do. I'm going to put your email contact so that if anybody just needs, some people may need to reach out to you, not to help you, but for you to help them, which is kind of why I want to do that. So I'm going to put your email in the show notes. We'll put links to how people can get a hold of your book when it comes out and how they can contact you. Before we wrap up, though, if you're sitting down today with someone who's just really going through some difficult times and they're struggling with, can I really trust God? And they don't know what to do. What would you tell them?
I think the conversation would have to land with, you know, where they are now and understanding that Jesus is not a stranger to, he's not a stranger to grief. He's not a stranger to loss. He's not a stranger to, I believe it's Hebrews 4, verse, like chapter 11, I mean, not chapter 11, Hebrews 4, verse 11 through 15, when it talks about that we have not a high priest who hasn't been touched by our infirmities, but, you know, had been tempted in all sides and sinned not. I've taken on a greater understanding of that because, you know, Jesus had gone through a whole lot more than what people take in consideration, that God is not a stranger, that Jesus is not a stranger to our infirmities. He's not a stranger to our challenges, as you probably hear my youngest son yelling at me.
That's fine, man. I'm glad to hear him.
Amen. But I don't try to use myself as the example. Mm-hmm. I try to I try to point to Jesus more than anything else, that he's not a stranger to loss. And I think in these moments that, yeah, we do use the all things work together, sure, to work for the good. We use Romans 8:28, but at the same time, I say there's the overarching statement, mm-hmm, of Romans 8:28, but then there's the practical walking through of Romans 8:28.
There you
and
go.
Understanding like there's no matter how hard things get, there's going to be somebody to walk with you through it.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing, is I think people we want to be quote unquote accepted. But the biggest thing is we want to know that people are walking with us in the worst times of our lives, and that they don't throw us off to the side. They don't say, well, I'm gonna wait till you get your act together, then we'll, you know, then we'll talk and then we'll start to hang out.
Yeah.
Just the simple things of community, yeah, the simple things of just doing life together, or scripture, we say communion, like that's what it is. If I'm not your friend, my closest friends have been through it with me in the best and worst of times.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the biggest thing, is that the measuring stick of our friendship is not when everything's good and everything's popping, as they would call it. But I think when things are bad, are you still my friend? Are you still going to encourage me? Are you still going to call me? Are you going to tell me that I'm garbage? I mean, really, mm-hmm, I mean, sometimes we need friends that are going to tell us that we're trash. but I mean, are they really in it to win it, in a sense? I mean, the highs and the lows. And that's what we're looking for. And yes, there is a God who is faithful, that walks with us through the good, bad, ugly, and uncomfortable. And so that's the thing that I really stress. And I, like I said, I don't try to wax super deep. I just say, listen, sometimes it's saying nothing. Sometimes it's just being there.
Yeah.
just being there. Hey, what can I help you with? You know, what task can I take off your plate? You know, simple things like that. You know,
dude, you are an inspiration, and I'm so thankful our paths crossed. And I thank you for taking the time to join me today. I know this podcast is going to help a lot of folks, and I'm hoping they're going to reach out to you in the days ahead. And I can't wait to read your book. So thank you again for being here.
Amen. Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me here.
Thanks for listening to the 95 Podcast. We look forward to sharing another episode with you next week. In the meantime, visit our website at 95network.org. The website is loaded with great resources created for small and mid-sized church leaders. Until next time, have a great week.